Ball hit deep in the left center field. Wise back. Makes the catch!
What a play!
Wade Wise makes the catch! What a play by Wise! Mercy!
This is the Shoeless Goat Podcast.
Brent Brown drops the ball! He drops the ball! 3 runs will score!
You gotta be paping me! What in the hell are you doing?
Hello and welcome back to the Shoeless Goat Podcast. We're a Cubs, White Sox, and MLB podcast. I'm your host, Nick, and I'm joined again by Mr. Crosstown Cup champion himself, Patrick Bovard. Pat, how we doing?
Nick, it's a good day anytime the Crosstown Cup is back home. As we all know, it went home this weekend to the south side of Chicago, where it rightfully belongs. The first time since 2016, and no, I don't know what else happened in 2016. But overall, pretty good weekend for the Sox, pretty good week for me so far. Nothing to complain about, and here we are talking baseball again.
All I'm saying is that a World Series champion has never held the Crosstown Cup in the same year.
That, I mean, we got to go back to 05 to check out whatever it was called then, but.
I think it was the BP Cup, so. And something the Crosstown Cup was, like, established, like, much later, like, probably, like, 2013 or something.
It's not even a cup anymore. It's like a box.
Yeah, I don't know. It's, no one knows what it looks like in. Quite frankly, not too many people care.
Usually the team that
is worse and holds the trophy cares a lot about it. But if you're the White Sox, you got to just like throw that in the trash pretty much.
Oh, dude, I want the banner.
Where would you put the banner?
I mean, they only have 11 playoff appearances, so there's plenty of real estate there at the stadium.
Well, and they could always take down like some like. I don't know, a special landmark dedicated to a lifelong worker to stick a little trophy there.
Oh, boy. No comment.
Okay, moving on. So we'll start the episode like we always do. Of course, we had Cubs and White Sox playing each other, so we'll each talk about when our teams won. So Pat's going to be doing a little bit more talking. But in any case, I'll start and go first. The Cubs hosted the Rockies. So another team that kind of struggles in the beginning of the week. They started off well, though, a 6-4 win, and then it was rained out on Tuesday, so momentum was stifled, but that's okay. We got a 7-inning doubleheader. I was able to attend the first half of it because it was $6 in the bleachers, and wouldn't you have it, a 5-2 victory by the hands of Patrick Wisdom, absolutely just whacking one onto Waveland Avenue over all of our heads. And we were in left field and he was engaging with the crowd the whole time. It was a great game, really fun atmosphere, and saw a couple home runs. Bodie with a home run as well, just got over the fence. So you have that second half or that second 7-inning game. This one actually went like into extras and deep into extras, which I wasn't sure how they were going to handle the 7-inning rule, but they did have runners on second base in the 8th inning, which I thought was rather interesting. Cubs lose that one 13-10, and then we will talk about the White Sox series after Pat starts his first half of the week with Blue Jays, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct. Yeah, they were up in Toronto the first half, the first series in Toronto for the Sox in about 2 years, back in 2019 when Vladdy was just a young 19-year-old making one of his debuts, and now he's an MVP, so that tells you how long it's been. In any event, though, it wasn't really a bad series in Toronto. They split it 2-2. It was just... it was a mixture of inconsistent and frustrating of how they got there. I'll kind of go through the series, but basically what it was pretty good starting pitching. Offense was literally on or off day by day, and the bullpen was frustrating as all hell with at least one person every game. So without further ado, on Monday, there was really no offense. They lost 1-2. Lance Lindell, but Craig Kimbrell struggled. I guess I could say again, as a member of the White Sox, he had one run scoring in that 8th. On a wild pitch, racked up 2 strikeouts, though, but unfortunately that's what the people are going to remember went in a 2-1 loss. Tuesday's offense came out firing against Jose Barrios. They scored 4 in the first, capped off by a Jose Abreu homer, and they won the game 5-2. Dylan Cease dealt. Michael Kopech kind of struggled in there a little bit, but Liam Hendricks was able to come in, get the 5-out save, close the door. Gave up 1 run, but whatever. They were up 5-1, so it doesn't matter. Wednesday, again, on and off offense. Offense went flat. I mean, again, just inconsistent. And then bullpen in that game was Aaron Bummer. He struck out the first 2 batters, gave up 3 hits in a row, a player reached on an error and walked the guy to lose the game there 3-1. And then Thursday, the offense woke up. So on, off, 10-7 win. They were up 9-2 at one point. got home runs from Cesar Hernandez, Luis Robert, Jose Abreu hit one, Aloy hit one in the ninth, I believe it was. And they were up 9-2, and then Kopech gave up five runs in the sixth, which was incredibly frustrating and concerning. But after that, Tapera, Crochet, and Kimbrel getting his first save as a White Sox shut the door. So, again, like I said, offense was either good or bad. Starting pitching was good, and there was one horrendous bullpen outing every game pretty much.
Consistently inconsistent. We'll just keep going with it. Pat, you were at how many of these games with the
I was at just Friday night. That was enough for my heart. I could not take any more after that.
So tell us why. Let's get a recap.
So Friday night, sitting out in the patio before the game, had my tickets out in the bleachers. So I'm just sitting there, you know, enjoying myself. All you can eat, all you can drink for about an hour and a half before the game. Before you ask Nick, I went the all you can eat route, had a couple of hot dogs, a couple of burgers. So we went that route on a Friday night, knew it was going to be a long game out there in the heat. But in any event, we're sitting there eating and the Sox are losing 6-0 because Dallas Keuchel is getting taken to the wood chipper by the Iowa Cubs. Not necessarily something you want to see, but I mean, that's what it was. So I'm just in there like, I don't really want to go to the seats. Eventually, obviously, I'm not going to sit behind a wall the entire game. Went out to my seats, and then the White Sox offense took off. They went absolutely nuts after that. Yaz had, in his first game back, that is, had two home runs and eight RBIs, including the home run that tied the game. Sox took the lead on that drop pop-up at short and never looked back from there. And something that I did not realize during the game was that Ronaldo Lopez threw five perfect innings in relief in that game. After coming in for Dallas Keuchel, who was pulled on an 0-1 count in the second inning against Patrick Wisdom, which was absolutely hysterical. But I mean, in any event, like this game, it had the starter giving up six runs, the offense scoring 17 with Yasmani Grandal getting eight RBIs, and Ronaldo Lopez threw five perfect innings and the Cubs still scored 13 in a 17-13 game. So that was just, there's no better way to describe that game than it was just dudes drunk. That was it. That's the only way to describe that game.
That game chose the all you can drink option, which I've told this to Pat many times. He's probably tired of hearing it, but for the listeners at home, if you ever have the chance at a game, at a concert, what have you, to have all you can eat and all you can drink, it's kind of a fallacy because you only really get to pick one. If you stuff yourself with food and brats and burgers and everything, then you're really not going to be able to drink as much as you actually want to, and vice versa. So Pat chose the all you can eat route. The baseball game itself chose the all you can drink route. Question for you, Pat. Were you in the camp that thought when they signed Dallas Keuchel, it was the White Sox version of John Lester?
No, because I hate that comparison. I think, let me put it this way. I would say if you had to rate the magnitude of a free agent signing, Grandal long-term was the bigger signing for the White Sox because he was the first really major domino to fall. Although his kind of came out of nowhere with no news. Keuchel was like other teams were going for him and they got him. But I mean, it's really not a fair comparison because, yeah, it's a big free agent pitcher that's a soft-tossing lefty, but that's about it. Lester was, what, a $200 million guy? And Keuchel got 55. Keuchel got 55. That really sums up all you need to know about that comparison. And I get on my soapbox here for a minute. I just do not like that every move the White Sox make has to correspond to the Cubs rebuild in some way. Like, last year was our 2015, or it was looking that Dallas Keuchel was John Lester. It's just, it's not the same thing and it doesn't have to be. And I hope it doesn't end up the same. Well, we can get into that later. I hope it doesn't end in the fiery blowout sale that the Cubs got.
Fair enough. Yeah. I was going to make the comparison they didn't get John Lester. They've in fact got John Lackey with the Dallas Keuchel deal, who had a pretty good first year as a Cub and then was a borderline playoff starter in the World Series team and didn't get a whole lot of action then, but had some key outs. But I think that's a more fair comparison, albeit me just kind of making fun of a Sox Twitter for making that comparison over and over again. I was watching the game. I'm running on the treadmill, and I was like, all right, like this is – naively, I was like, this is in the bag, six runs in the first inning, right? And then Wisdom, first pitch – bomb. He hit two bombs in that game. So this is the Cubs side of it. So for those keeping track at home, this is three Wisdom bombs in the first four games of the week, and it would not stop there. We'll talk about him a little bit later as well. But it was an enjoyable game until it wasn't, and for the Sox fans, it was an unenjoyable game until it wasn't. Right?
It was a lot of fun when it turned.
Yeah, I had turned it off at some point when it was 9-6. Then my phone buzzed, and I assumed they would lose like 20-6. Turns out they put up some more runs to make it interesting, but it was an absolute beatdown.
Yeah, I was out in the suburbs for the weekend and had to take the Metro back, and I was like, you know what, I'm going to stay all the way to the end. Then all of a sudden, it's like, I cannot miss the 11:30. I cannot be on a train at 12:30 at night because that sounds miserable on a Metro going out to the suburbs. So I was like, I got to leave. Sox are winning like whatever it was at that time, like 14-9. I feel good. And then it's 17-9. I'm like, okay, great. And then I see Kimbrel's giving up home runs. I'm like, Jesus Christ, like it just can't end.
Yeah. So we'll allow it to end, though. We'll move on to the next day. A day I would like to talk about is pretty much, I think, possibly a nail in the coffin to a Lance Lynn Cy Young. Alec Mills out-dueling, giving up. Well, we'll talk about it. Out-dueling, 7-0 win for the Cubs, and two more Patrick Wisdom home runs, making the grand total for the week 5. Love to see it. That jersey purchase I made in a less than ideal state turned out to be a good one. In fact, a grand one. So I'm excited about it. Cubs get the win Saturday. Avoid an embarrassing Southside sweep.
Yeah, I was hoping for the double sweep this year. That would have been a lot of fun there. But I kind of was watching the game at the beginning and I saw Lance Lynn starting to get lit up and I'm like, yeah, okay, I don't need to watch any more of this. I didn't want to see him. Didn't want to see what happened there. Offense didn't really show up, kind of the exact opposite of the first game. So what are you going to do? I still think Lynn is going to be the front runner for the Cy Young as of right now. I mean, I guess you got Garrett Cole. Are the old writers going to want to vote for a guy that uses sticky stuff? We don't know. And I mean, the White Sox didn't help themselves though, because Robbie Ray diced him up for 14 strikeouts, which didn't help. And then, I mean, who else would be up there? Rodon and Chris Bassett, which, I don't want to say anything about Chris Bassett, but I mean, obviously he might not pitch again this year. And then Rodon has been hurt. So it's kind of a crapshoot, I guess.
Yeah, no, it certainly is. And I'm more just like throwing gasoline on the fire for you.
I was trying to put out that fire.
Yeah. I mean, you say that the old guys don't want to vote for the guy who puts the sticky stuff, but at least Garrett Cole doesn't throw his belt at umpires. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I forgot about that. That's they're not going to like that either. If they don't like thumbs down, they're not going to like that.
Oh, no. The thumbs downs are a no-go on this podcast especially. We will certainly talk about that as well. But anyway, moving on. The rubber match, if you will. Sox go into Sunday, hoping to get a series win on the week and the first series win on the week. Cubs looking to get their second series win on the week. How did it shake out, Pat?
Yeah, so luckily for me, it went pretty well. They won, Sox won, that is, 13-1. Dylan Cease kind of had his revenge game with 11 strikeouts. Luis Robert had two homers. Brian Goodwin added one. Eloy had one, and Yaz had another one. So he had three for the series. Just really overall, you know, a great game, kind of a put it away early, got after Kyle Hendricks, almost said Liam there, but I stopped myself. And I mean, you can't really ask for much more than that. I mean, if you look at the series for the White Sox, they scored 30 runs. They won one game by 4. They lost one game by 7. And then they won one game by 13. Like, those numbers shouldn't add up that way, but that's how they did. If that got the offense woken up for the rest of the year, especially now with the series coming up against the Pittsburgh Pirates, I will certainly take it.
Yeah, I mean, if we were going by soccer rules, going into Sunday, the Cubs were winning on run differential at a 20-17. So the Sox had to put that to bed in a number of ways, and they did. I mean, look, I wasn't expecting to get a win. I saw 21 runs of offense in 3 games. Usually you'd say that, you'd probably say you got 2, maybe even 3 wins. They got 1. But that's not the story anymore for this year. The story is just trying to find fun in, in certain areas. And the fun right now is the mustached wonder that is Patrick Wisdom. I'll segue right into this. He is your Cubs player of the week. He batted .278 with 5 home runs in 5 games. So because he didn't play in that second doubleheader game against the Rockies, this dude is legit. I mean, he is top 3 in Rookie of the Year voting, and he's going up against India from the Reds and Rogers from the Marlins. Going by the odds, I have the betting odds pulled up here. Jonathan India is a -900 to get it, and I don't understand why. Trevor Rogers pitching for the Marlins is a plus 600, and Wisdom in third place technically at plus 750. So this is what I'm getting excited about. Just as in years past, we were looking at Tim Anderson batting averages and Jose Abreu RBI totals. Now it's time to look at things like Rookie of the Year voting and care about that kind of stuff. So I want to go through the stats really quick, and then I'll let you kind of expand upon it, Pat. But in India on the Reds right now, second baseman has a 2.8 WAR, is batting 272 with 17 homers and 59 RBI. Okay, Wisdom is a 2.6 WAR. He's batting 256, but he has 25 homers and 50 RBI. So more homers, less RBIs, less batting average, slightly less WAR. And then Rogers, pitcher, hard to compare, but a 3.1 WAR, 7-6 with a 2.45 ERA and 129 strikeouts. Now, I would think that the candidacy for Rogers is more than the candidacy for India, but I guess make your case or don't make your case on who you think of those three makes the most sense to get it.
I would say a personal attachment with Rogers. And by that, I mean, I saw him pitch when I was in Miami earlier this summer, and he absolutely dealt that day. If it's who I think is going to win, it's going to be India because he's on potentially a playoff team. As stupid as that may be, that's probably what it's going to come down to, assuming he doesn't tail off or Patrick Wisdom doesn't go like absolutely insane and end up with like 40 home runs over the last month plus. If it were me voting, I would. It's hard to tell between comparing a starting pitcher and then somebody with Wisdom that doesn't have the same national appeal. It's kind of hard to compare those two, especially because it's not like the Marlins are a big national draw either, but neither are the Reds. If it were up to me, probably the way I've seen Patrick Wisdom play, I'd probably lean towards him. But that was also me kind of seeing him tear apart the Sox, diving at third, making plays, which you probably don't talk enough about his defense. I haven't looked at the numbers, so I'm not going to act like I've been digging him up on Baseball Savant, but he played a lot better. He was playing a lot better third base than I was realizing on too.
Yeah. And well, especially with the freak Bodie injury of him tripping over a baseball and everything like that, you can stick him at third and then you could put, you know, Hap and left field, I guess, but he could play everywhere too. So that, I think that's a big part of it, but also, yeah, you're right. He's on a trash team. But you know, we have seen a lot of Rookie of the Years come from like bad teams though. I mean, like a lot of like Marlins and Orioles, I feel like, are always in the running for
Kyle
rookie
Lewis,
of the
2020.
Year. Yeah. I mean, you had that, Chris Coughlin way back in the day was a Rookie of the Year. So just saying it's not out of the realm of possibilities. It's the last thing for Cubs fans to get excited about. And therefore, because of the stats and because of that, player of the week and number one in our hearts, even though number 16 on our backs of our jerseys, Patrick Wisdom.
I miss the days when we could talk about Yermin Mercedes in the Rookie of the Year voting.
Oh, we will talk about Yermin later. Don't you worry.
Oh boy. Yeah. Okay.
So, Pat, who's the Sox player of the
week? Yeah, I was going to say, in that case, I'll at least take an offensive approach here. Offensive, not like offensive, but, you know, the semantics. Anyways, with all due respect to Jose Abreu becoming the first player in the majors this year to get to 100 RBIs, talking about Jose Abreu RBIs again, it's Yasmani Grandal, just to mess with you, but not really, though. He came back this week and kind of immediately showed what the White Sox offense had been missing without him. Three games this week against the Cubs, hit 500 with a 1.333 slugging and only one walk. Three homers, 10 RBIs, and a double in three games. I mean, I think that just sums it up right there. They had been fluctuating back and forth between Sebi Zavala and Zach Collins. Collins, who's been struggling all year, is now back in Charlotte. Zavala, for the defensive, like, he's a pretty solid defensive catcher, maybe not the best at blocking, but he's closer in framing to Grandal than Collins is by far. And he had been hitting enough to at least justify keeping him on the roster. But really, the offense, the biggest thing they were missing was Grandal. And I think it's apparent now they have that kind of power bat in the middle lineup switch hitter. And he's at least patient, which a lot of the guys can get in those ruts where they're just swinging at everything. And Grandal does not do that, which is huge. And I just want to say this too, while I'm talking about him. On the year, he's up to a 2.3 WAR, 148 WRC+, 17 homers, almost 24% walk rate. And as you'll like to know now, has cracked the Mendoza line. He's batting 207 on the season after this weekend. So that's big. And because I have to do this here, just before you get any rebuttal in, comparing him to Salvador Perez, who I've been hearing multiple people say is having the best offensive season by any catcher ever, Yasmani Grandal has a 20-point higher WRC+, plus and only 0.3 less F4 in 270 less plate appearances. So I would like the people praising Salvador Salvi to just put the brakes on a little bit.
I've never liked the Salvador Perez hype. It's not as bad as the Yachty hype, but it's pretty bad.
I've seen people are talking about him going to the Hall of Fame.
Perez, yeah.
Yeah, what are we talking about here?
It's ridiculous how the bar has been lowered for catchers just to make Yachty look good.
Yeah. Salvi Perez, yeah, he hits home runs, but he walks like 2% of the time and doesn't do anything besides if you look defensively, he's horrible.
Yeah. He's got to stay healthy too, and he never does. Yep. So, no, I would say neither of them get in. I'm just going to keep bringing it back to Yachty because, there was a lot of, he signed that extension, a week and a half ago for one more year. Yachty stays a Cardinal or whatever, and then he's going to retire. And everyone's already calling him a Hall of Famer, and, people are like, all right, well, then when's Jason Kendall getting in? When's Brad Ausmus getting in? Because they all have, the same, war and stats.
I wonder what A.J. Pierzynski is compared to Yachty.
They're really close in comparison. If you want to do a quick check.
This is why we have computers. Let me pull this up right here. So AJ, this is Fangraphs. I'm going with that. Right. So AJ for his career, whenever my computer decides to load, was at 20.7 WAR. Oh, he's going to get blown out of the water. So 20.7.
Yeah, because Yadier is 41.8. But then if you go to similarity scores, at least at the bottom of Baseball Reference.
Okay, yeah, this is bad. He's 55.3 on Fangraphs. That backfired on me real quick.
Yeah, see, if you look at, who was it? Jason Kendall, I feel like, had a really close one. And this is just great radio, by the way. This is just how much we hate Yadier. Yeah, okay, this is perfect, right? Jason Kendall, 41.7 WAR. Yachty Molina, 41.8 career WAR. Okay.
Baseball Reference.
Baseball Reference.
Okay.
So Kendall 288 career batting average. Yachty 280. Obviously, 2,195 hits for Kendall. Less hits for Yachty. 2,093 home runs. Will go to Molina by about double though. So 168 to 75. But I'm just saying Is anyone making the argument that Jason Kendall is a Hall of Famer? It would be absurd. He's probably maybe made the ballot once and got removed immediately. Yep. But their offensive stats are pretty similar. Defensive stats not even close. But again, writers are voting for defensive stats, and I just don't leadership. Take those. Yeah, I don't take much stock in the ones that the writers vote on.
Yeah, I mean I don't know, especially with catchers, it's the defense is so convoluted because I feel a lot of times you look at fielding percentage or blocking. It's framing is probably more important in the long run for a catcher. I guess that's debatable, especially once they go to robot umps. But I don't know. Of catcher's day, who has a chance? Real Muto and Posey maybe? And even Posey, I don't know. He's got the World Series ring, but Yachty's going to get in. I think we've agreed that he's going to get in because
it's just wrong. But it's just wrong. And we've also just gone on this very Phillips-esque rant about something we didn't actually plan on talking about. So it happens to the best of us. One last point about catchers. My father will argue with gusto, in fact, that framing is cheating. So there's that.
Oh, no.
Yeah, you're trying to fool the umpire by framing. So therefore,
it's an art. Cheating. It's an art.
Yeah, so we won't get into that. What we will get into, though, of course, is the MLB big story of the week. And it became a big story only because Mets owner took the bait, right? But, the Mets made some acquisitions, got some players, including Javier Baez, and then went on a skid. And Javier Baez is tired of hearing the boos from the Mets faithful, as one would expect he would get when he strikes out. Hits a home run, gives a thumbs down sign, double thumbs down sign. Lindor hits a double off the wall, copies Baez, double thumbs down signs to each other, not to the fans. But then Baez came out and said that he was tired of hearing the boos and that the fans should know how it feels as well. I don't know if this is soft or if this is commendable. I haven't really made up my mind yet. I will say that I don't think I've booed seriously at a sporting event because I think it's dumb. But I don't know. What do you think of this whole thing?
I can't say I've never booed. I'm pretty sure I was definitely booing out there when Dallas Keuchel was getting lit up in the first inning after it. I was at the patio. It makes sense. In any event, I think it's just my whole opinion of this thing is just it's so stupid that this is a controversy. I apparently this has been going on for weeks that they've been doing that. and nobody noticed. And then somebody asked Javi, and now all of a sudden the fans are freaked out. Sandy Alderson is calling a like all hands on deck meeting and talk about how it's unacceptable. People are quoting Derek Jeter talking about not booing fans because they deserve it. It's like, dude, just it doesn't matter. I mean, it's just like, I mean, I guess maybe it's a microcosm of the Mets season where it's gone kind of from where it was at like 80% playoff odds to now being completely out of the picture. And then who could forget the whole raccoon or rat thing from a couple weeks ago, or was it squirrel or rat, whatever the hell that they said that's what they were fighting over. But I don't know. This is just like, of all the, there's been a lot going on with the Mets in the last year, and of all the things for the team to put out this harsh statement about, this seems kind of just dumb. I don't know.
It is dumb, and I'll amend my boo thing. I'll boo when it's funny to boo, like when there's a pickoff throw to first base or something like that. Like, that's hilarious. But yeah, no, real dumb. I saw the best tweet of this whole thing is like Mets fans are used to gestures like that. It shows like the Met mascot flipping the dude off from a couple of years ago.
Dude, it's always something. It's literally like, of course it's the Mets.
I think Mets fans are soft, honestly. Like, well, I think Javi will know. There's no way in hell he's re-signs with that team.
No, he's gone.
I don't. The only thing that keeps him there is like wanting to play with Lindor. But yeah. I think he got his fix.
Yeah, and I mean, they don't like Lindor either out there. I mean, that's a. I'm not going to get into whether or not that contract is good 3 months into a 13-year or whatever it was commitment, but I don't think they're going to like him by the end of that.
No, they might not like him by the middle of it either. If he keeps giving those mean thumbs down gestures, my God.
All right, absolutely disgusting.
You know what? We're just as guilty for bringing it back up, so I think we should move on. Of course, by moving on, we're going to the LinkedIn player profile, which is where we go through the life of a former Cub, former White Sox. Using LinkedIn as a primary source, maybe we'll invoke some fun memories. I don't remember my guy playing, so we'll start with you, Pat. Who do you have this week for LinkedIn player profile?
Yeah, so I'm going for a longtime White Sox, a former defensive standout catcher who was never quite an offensive star. It's Ron Karkovits. So he was with the Sox for a pretty long time, about 12 years, 86 to 97, and was nicknamed Officer Ron Karkovits by Hawk because of how good he was at throwing out base runners. I was too young to really remember any of this, but apparently he had an arm. In any event, he, like I said, played in the majors for 11 years, threw out 41% of base stealers in his career. And the only other thing noted in his playing career on Wikipedia is that he hit an inside-the-park grand slam off of Minnesota Twins pitcher David West at the Metrodome. So one of the few good White Sox memories from that stadium. Overall, in a pretty long career, played in over 900 games, had a 13.7 WAR. So, I don't know, probably about what you'd expect from a longtime backup catcher. Pretty respectable. We go to LinkedIn, and there's a decent amount going on here. He is currently works at Retired in Orlando, Florida. So that is interesting. We got some, he was a baseball coach in New Jersey, Newark baseball coach, 09 to 2011 for three seasons. The baseball manager of the Camden River Sharks of the Atlantic League from 2012 to 2014. And he has been retired since 2014. So apparently the Camden River Sharks did him in his baseball career. And his one interest on LinkedIn is pro baseball. So that's probably something you gather after, 12 years in the big leagues and a pretty good coaching career. So, that's all I really got. I wish I remembered more of him playing because there were some big years there out in the 90s with the White Sox in general, but that's what I got.
So an inside-the-park grand slam at the Metrodome, I feel like that had to, like, bounce off the plastic outfield walls.
Hit the roof, get, like, caught underneath something, like, rattle around down there. Yeah, it had to be, like, yeah, I don't remember that being a particularly big outfield.
Didn't they have like what looked like stretched garbage bag outfield walls?
Yeah, that's what it looked like. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they also had because it was a football field, they had the seats like folded up. So there was kind of like a mini big wall in right field, which that's a complete, I don't even know what the word is, but they mean opposite things.
Big mini wall. Yes, of course.
Yeah.
the big mini version of like an episode we do that's like 10 minutes long, but it's the most important things we've ever talked about.
Exactly.
We'll talk about that in the off season. Okay. Yeah, no, I was just imagining like the ball getting hit so hard that it gets like
just rips
embedded deep into the hefty bag outfield and just launched in the other direction. I don't know. That'd be cool. We'll have to look it up. See if there's a video available for it. Not right now though, cause we've already done enough computer searching during an episode. But in any case, great stuff. For me, we're going with Jeff Kunkel. So Yeah, that's an interesting name in general. Hmm. But he was a Cub only in the year 1992. He's actually the son of late American League pitcher and umpire Bill Kunkel. So, you know, if you're a pitcher, you don't like how it's been called your entire career, you switch sides and become an umpire. In any case, he was a third overall pick in the first round of the 1983 draft out of Rider University. And let's see, he was selected as, this is out of high school, he was selected as the number 74 of the top 100 Jersey Shore athletes of the millennium. Ooh. By the Asbury Park Press in 1999. So that's pretty high praise. In any case, for his career, pretty lackluster, especially for a number 3 overall pick. Career 221 batting average with 18 home runs and 73 RBIs. I think we have another case of a guy writing his own Wikipedia page, and I'll give you a couple of examples why. Yeah. It says, Kunkel reached the big leagues quickly, but never developed into a full-time player. The Rangers gave him the opportunity to win the starting shortstop position, but he was always thwarted by his hitting stats and obstacles, such as Curtis Wilkerson, Scott Fletcher, Fred Manrique, Gary Green, and Jeff Hudson. Plagued with numerous potential career-ending injuries, Kunkel worked hard to rehabilitate himself to finish an 11-year professional baseball career with 5.5 years of Major League service. And he says, a versatile player with the ability to play 8 of the 9 positions on the field, he actually pitched... without breaking the sentence, he actually pitched 3 times in mop-up stints. And then finally, there's a specific section where it's labeled best year. In 1989, it's 1 sentence long or 2 sentences long. And it just says best year. It would have been great if it was like, you know, like the year he met his wife or something like that. That would be a dead giveaway. Yep. But best year in 1989, Kunkel recorded his best season and more playing time opened for him due to the trade of Scott Fletcher to the Chicago White Sox. Hmm. He responded by hitting a career-high 270 with 8 homers and 29 RBIs in 108 games. This success was short-lived, and by 1990, he was back to his previous role as a reserve player. So Wikipedia definitely written by him. We know his LinkedIn was as well, also labeled as retired. So good for both of our guys here. So he made a pivot to mortgages and loans, which is really exciting stuff. He worked for AVP Operational Risk, which with Quality Assurance for Exeter Finance Corp, and then Pathways Corp Training Inc., and then Caliber Home Loans up until 2020. And from 94, though, on for the last 27.8 years, he's had Jeff Kunkel's Baseball Fundamentals for baseball instruction, private group, and coaches, baseball lessons, hitting, pitching, throwing, and fielding. Finally, he did not label his jobs in the MLB, but he has said he's a Texas Rangers Major League alumni. Interesting stuff. 2 retired guys just living out their lives after pretty lengthy MLB careers. You'd think a guy who batted 221 would have not lasted 8 years in the majors, but Jeff Kunkel found a way, so good for him.
Despite numerous almost career-ending injuries.
Yeah, no, I mean, he got 5.5 full seasons out of 11 years, so good for him.
Yeah, not quite a pension, but yeah, that's respectable.
Yeah. Anyway, that concludes the LinkedIn player profile, and then it also concludes our episode. But of course, we would not have the end of the episode without asking Pat a question that he has not heard before, and we had a clue about it earlier. So here we go. Who is the better folklore story in Chicago this year, Yermin Mercedes or Patrick Wisdom?
Oh, that's easy. It's Yermin. It has to be. Patrick Wisdom is being like advertised on the Field of Dreams for 2022. However much hyped up that game is going to be, he's like actually going to be around, like you would think, for this next segment of the Cubs. To be a folklore, you need to like just be gone as soon as you were here. You have a burger named after you. You're on fire, and then you're gone. You're retiring. You're coming back on Instagram the next day, posting a picture of a phoenix after posting it's over. So he was like a legend out there with that. He had the big chains. People were buying his jerseys. He had the burger. They were going to some random restaurant just to get the burger. He was eating 3 of them before a game. He retires on Instagram with it's over becoming a meme. He puts up the phoenix. He's back. Now I don't even know what he's doing in Charlotte. I see him like hitting 500 feet home run every couple days, but we're probably never going to hear from him again in the majors, which I think to me contributes more to the folklore than somebody who might actually carve out as a career as a useful major league player for multiple years.
No, I agree. If we're going by the strict definition of a folklore, for sure. I think this last 2-month stretch, if Wisdom just falls off the planet afterwards, then he will have entered folklore status, especially if he lands Rookie of the Year and then you just never hear from him again. But yeah, I mean, we need a Wisdom Burger or something. We need like,
Wisdom Burger sounds good.
Yeah. Wisdom Burger would be good. I don't know. I haven't seen another Wisdom jersey besides mine, so I definitely landed on that train of buying into the short-lived hype. But in any case, this was a great episode, of course. Pat, thank you so much for being on. We are taking a bit of a hiatus, right? You're going somewhere?
Yeah, I'm going to be out of the country for 2 weeks.
Okay. Well, we will probably pick it up after that with a playoff preview, maybe, because it'll be about that time.
Yeah, it'll be right around when the Sox are ramping back up. That's a good thing. I'm gone when there's like not a real pennant race, because the Sox have locked up the Central for like 3 months now. So probably couldn't have picked a better year to do that.
You hope anyway. You could also be out of country with poor internet service for the worst collapse in MLB history. So stay tuned, folks.
I don't think I'd come back in that case.
No, just stay over there. All right,
until the end of October.
Thank you so much for tuning in. You can listen to us at Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever else you listen to the podcast, SantChicago.com. Check out some articles Pat's been writing. I'm going to get back on the writing train a little bit too. Just remember, everybody, Yadi Molina is not a Hall of Famer. Go Cubs, go White Sox, go MLB.